B-Pod Studios.
Stay with us and we're going to show you how to take dead aim.
Take dead aim.
The importance of taking dead aim.
Welcome to Taking Dead Aim, a show dedicated to the game of golf and the people who play it in the Carolinas and around the world. Taking Dead Aim is a presentation of RBC Wealth Management and Academy Sports and Outdoors. And now, here's your host, the guy using your member number at the snack bar, Charlie Nance.
Welcome back. Once again, we're Taking Dead Aim, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors. I'm Charlie Nance on Twitter at CLT_golf guy. Today on the show, a couple of great takes on the upcoming PGA Tour season with John Patrick, syndicated host of the Augusta Golf Show, and CBSSports.com's Eye on Golf, Kyle Porter. Also, we'll check in with an old friend, Jason Mingle, who was the tournament director when the PGA Championship was held here at Quail. Now he's in charge of the 2020 Ryder Cup. But we begin with John Patrick and 10 predictive questions. John, last year this was question number one, over under major appearances by Tiger Woods. I set the number at 1.5. This year, I'm going to alter it somewhat. Over under just regular tournament wins by Tiger. And again, I'm setting the number at 1.5.
You know, I'll say over only because I think it might be 2. I don't know that I'm all on board. I don't know. I think age factors into this more than anybody wants to admit. I think it gets harder to win at 43. I think it'll be harder to win at 44. And I think that's something to consider. So I will go over, but I will only go to 2.
Now, I remember last year we had a similar discussion about Phil Mickelson, and you and I both agreed that if he was going to win, he would win early rather than late, and we were right on that. Is that the same kind of feeling you have about Tiger? If he's going to win in the tournament season, it's going to be early rather than later?
No, I think I'd go the other way. I think I've got more belief that he'll win later. I never know. I always hope that at this time of the year, you know, he's honing that game and he's getting it finely tuned. But back to the age thing, I think later rather than earlier. Now, having said that, if he wins early, April will be a circus. But I think later. I think later.
April's going to be a circus anyway, and you know that.
Yeah, that's true.
Question number 2. More likely to happen, Rory and or Spieth complete the career Grand Slam this year, or neither ever completes it?
I'll take neither ever completes it.
That's the safe bet. I think that is the only 5 have done it, period. So if we're just limiting it to 1 year, right?
Yeah, 1 year and one tournament. I mean, you know, there's only one left on the block. You get one shot at that every year. I think better chance neither one of them get it.
John Patrick is the syndicated host of the Augusta Golf Show, our guest Taking Dead Aim. 10 predictive questions for the upcoming golf season. Number 3, last year I asked if Justin Thomas and Brooks Koepka were more likely to build off of their major championship success or have that chasing appearance fees hangover that we see so often. Both had really good years. Brooks had a great one. Will both, either, or neither win a major this year?
Is it neither or neither?
I don't know. Potato, potato.
I think Justin has a better chance of winning a major more than Brooks does. I still don't believe in Brooks.
3 wins in his last 6 majors, and you're not on board yet?
No, I'm not on board yet. I think Justin has a better chance of picking up a major before Brooks does.
Well, that being said, here are your venues: Augusta, Bethpage, Pebble, Royal Portrush. Where do you think he has the best shot?
I'd say the Open Championship, but Royal Portrush is kind of the wild card.
Yeah, we don't know.
Bethpage.
All right. Speaking of those championship venues, question number 4: do you think that these venues that are in play this year, are we more likely to see the usual suspects padding their major championship resumes, or are we more likely to see first-time winners?
I think first-time winners. I really do. I wouldn't be surprised if the year looks a lot like last week in Mississippi with this kid Cameron Champ, I wouldn't be surprised if the casual golf fan doesn't learn a lot of new names next year. I really would.
Thank you for bringing up Cameron Champ. He's question number five here. He just won his first tour event, and this guy kills it. He averaged 324 off the tee, which was near last in the field in fairways hit, but third in greens hit. Is this what is wrong with the game, or is this just where the game is and there's nothing we can do about it?
I thought the question was going to be, is this what's right with the game or wrong with the game? Oh, this is where we are. There's nothing we can do about this. This is where we are. I'll tell you a quick story about Cameron. He played here at Sage Valley in the Junior Invitational, and we had a long driving contest. And when the kids found out Cameron was going to be a part of it, a lot of them backed out. He ended up not winning because he didn't hit a fairway.
Wow. Now, you know, John, we say there's nothing that can be done. And instead of spending gazillions of dollars to roll back equipment and technology, I observed something at the Ryder Cup this year that perhaps if we spent no money and just raised the mower height in the rough, we could solve some of this bomb and gouge because they would not be able to do it.
Well, I wish that's what the USGA would figure out. go back to the old U.S. Open setup, fast greens, high rough, and let's see what they can do, narrow fairways, and let's see what they can do. I do think we have to accept, though, that this is where we are. This is the new normal. This is how far these players will hit it. And yet, with all of that, there aren't a whole lot of 22 under pars. So I think the Zach Johnsons of the world are each and every year getting passe. But I don't see anything changing. I really don't.
Now, I was talking to Ron Green Jr. earlier, and we were discussing how this win by Champ doesn't get him in at Augusta, but it does get him in at Kapalua. Potentially, we could see some things at Kapalua with Cameron Champ that get your popcorn ready.
Has anyone driven 18 yet?
I think we could see driver 8 or 9 iron. I really think we could.
Yeah, that's probably true. The kid, it's just, you see all of these guys hit it a long way, and it is just different with him.
When you hear people in the crowd who don't even bother with the Baba Booey and everything else, you hear people going, damn. I mean, that's that sets it all for me.
Yeah.
John Patrick, syndicated host of the Augusta Golf Show, our guest taking dead aim, our 10 predictive questions for the upcoming golf season. We're up to number 6. Bryson DeChambeau, Ricky Fowler, John Rahm. Those are the only three players currently ranked in the top 10 in the world who have not won a major. Who wins one first? Will it be this year? And if I threw in number 11, Tommy Fleetwood in the mix, would that change your answer?
Yeah, I think Tommy. I would choose Tommy over those three. And I could see Tommy winning something this year. I think it would have to be either here or the Open Championship.
I'm a believer. I think that guy's game wins anywhere in the world on whatever you want to play on. I think he's great.
Oh, I agree. I couldn't agree more. I think Fairway Jesus is rock solid.
No question. John, one of my favorite annual questions here. It's very simple. Yes or no. Do you think the United States Golf Association finds a way to screw up the setup at Pebble Beach and make themselves the story once again at the U.S. Open?
No, I don't think they will. I think Pebble's a different animal. I think they know how to deal with Pebble. I think for a lot of reasons, for the last 2 years on their back, I think for it being Pebble and they know what to do. The Pebble's made some changes. I think the 17 was questionable at the last U.S. Open. I don't think that'll be a question this year with its firmness. They get this one right. They get this one right.
Your faith in the USGA and Mike Davis is somewhat stunning to me. I would, even though I agree with everything you're saying, there's a part of me that still says, yeah, but it's Mike Davis and the USGA. They will find a way like no one else can.
I think the struggle with the USGA and going back to traditional courses, vis-a-vis Oakmont, Shinnecock, whatever, I don't think they know how to set those up. I don't think they allow the golf course to just be the golf course. And it's 100 years old, and you can't do 21st century stuff to a 100-year-old golf course. Now Pebble's 100 years old, but Pebble gets used all the time, and you don't have a lot. It doesn't feel like you have the same sort of inclination to do that sort of thing at Pebble. So I think they can get Pebble right.
Well, And in terms of Pebble, there's one thing that they have going for it and it's to your point where they screw up other courses. I think the USGA's biggest problem is their obsession with a par 70, 280 score. I think that it's wrong, and they wind up messing with golf courses. That being said, it's very simple to turn Pebble into a par 70 golf course that does not feel forced, and they've done it many times, so I think that is in their favor.
Yeah, there's just something about Pebble that I just don't think they'll screw that up. I don't really know why. There's just something about it. Here's how you play Pebble. Here's what you do with Pebble. Just go play Pebble. I really think they struggle with how to bring a 100-year-old course into the 21st century. To your point, to try to get par as the old man par as the score, and they don't have to do that, but they insist on doing it.
This one's a little close to home for you. Billy Payne is going into the World Golf Hall of Fame, I think primarily for his work in growing the game in the last 10 years as chairman of Augusta National. However, he made no significant changes to the golf course. That was not going to be his legacy. How much change and how fast do you think they occur with Chairman Fred Ridley? And is there any chance of rolling back some of the Hootie changes that were so universally panned?
Yeah, there's a chance of rolling back the changes now that Hootie has passed. And I think they'll do it subtly and quietly. I think all of those chairmen are very careful not to make massive changes. I don't think Billy Payne wanted anything to do with Amen Corner. I get the same impression from Fred Ridley. Five will be longer this year. You know, Chairman Payne made very small incremental changes. Tees lengthened just, 5 to 10 yards, almost imperceptibly. I don't know about Fred yet. I don't get a sense of where Fred is yet. And maybe this change of the fifth tee, they'll see how that plays, they'll see how that goes, and he'll play it by ear. I still to this day don't think anybody wants anything to do with backing up the 13th tee or moving the 13th green or anything like that.
That's what I was going to ask you. Is it an inevitability that 13 will be messed with? Do you think that this chairman is the one to do it?
Well, he'd be the one to do it just through length of service.
Yeah.
If he's going to be the chairman for 5 to 10 years, and if they're going to move 13 back, then it's going to happen in the next 5 to 10 years. I really think they love Sunday. They love setting up that golf course for it to be maximum excitement, and a hole like 13 brings maximum excitement. Why do you want to make it risk reward? Or at least more risk than reward.
Right.
That is an entertainment extravaganza on Sunday. It is less and less of a golf tournament. It is more and more, let's just watch how this takes place. So that reason alone, I don't think they mind, people hitting 13 with 5 irons. You still got to make the putt. You still got to make the eagle, and then it's exciting, and this person made the eagle. I think they like that.
John Patrick's the syndicated host of the Augusta Golf Show, our guest taking Dead Aim. 10 predictive questions for the upcoming golf season. Is there a player that you have your eye on? A Cameron Champ, perhaps? Sam Burns, Austin Cook, someone of that ilk that you think will take that next step this year?
I don't know how if this falls into your category. I think Schauffele is really rock solid. I like Xander Schauffele. I would not expect – nothing he does would surprise me. I think he's that good a player. I don't know if that falls into your realm of
No, it does. It does. His step would be from really solid, better than average, you know, top echelon PGA pro to major champion. So you think that he has a shot to become a major champion in the near future?
Yeah, I think. I think multiple winner first. I wouldn't be surprised to see him win 2-3 times in a year, and then a major championship. But that's the guy that I think out there is, like, sneaky good.
You have been very prescient with this annual final question over the years, eerily so at times. Last one, get you out of here on this. Your surprise or gut prediction about anything in the world of golf in 2019?
I think at this time next year, we'll know that Phil is done. I think at this time, you know, he'll make it public. I think this time next year, we'll know how Phil gets out of the game.
Syndicated host of the Augusta Golf Show and one never shy with an opinion. That's why I love him. That's John Patrick. And when we return, an old friend in a new place, Jason Mingle, takes Dead Aim at his new job, director of the 2020 Ryder Cup, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
We're taking Dead Aim, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors. When we first met Jason Mingle, he was the puppet master and tournament director when the PGA Championship came to town at Quail Hollow. Now, he's got a brand new job with the PGA, running the 2020 Ryder Cup, and we had the chance to catch up last month. Jason, before we get to your current port of call and adventures, I want to turn back the clock a bit. You spent 2+ years preparing for and then running the PGA Championship held here at Quail Hollow. I've heard a lot of numbers thrown around and a lot of false modesty coming from the club. That's usually the case, but I want to cut to the chase with you. On a scale of 1 to 10, how big a success did the PGA consider its initial major championship here?
Yeah, I think, you know, on that as a measuring stick, you know, there's always things that we could do better, right? And we continue to improve each and every year with the PGA Championship. But I think by all measures, you know, certainly the community in Charlotte turned out in record numbers. We had a great champion in Justin Thomas, and we had great ratings on TV. And so if you put the 3 of those together or 4 of those elements together, I think all parties would consider it a success.
So somewhere between 8 and 10 or higher than 8?
Well, I'm hesitant to ever give a 10, but certainly higher than 8.
All right. Well, that's good enough. On a personal level, your sainted wife and children have followed you around for now a couple of these 2-year tour of duty things. I got to ask, you know, how PO'd was she when you said, honey, we're leaving God's country here in Charlotte for the Arctic of Minnesota?
You know what? She knew it was coming, so it wasn't a surprise. But, you know, it's not a fun process, moving your things across country.
I've done it too many times to count. I know exactly what you're saying.
Right, especially when we're leaving a place that we were so fond of as we were in Charlotte. So I'm sure there's a few of our friends and whatnot listening. So hello to everybody back in Charlotte.
Jason, you're now in the process of preparing Whistling Straits for the Ryder Cup. First, how is this a different thing than what you did here at Quail, or is it?
You know, it is different, and a lot of that has to do with just, you know, some of the for instance, there's not 156 players in the field. There's 24. So that poses both opportunities and challenges. We've got a number of other ancillary events going on around the Ryder Cup, whether it's the opening or closing ceremonies, or some of the other things that happen throughout the week. But, you know, both events are special. But the Ryder Cup is, you know, when you have that element of playing for country, which, you know, we just saw was so powerful across the pond in France, that it adds something special for whether it's contestants or the spectators or the viewers at home.
So are you legitimately thinking about parties and things like that right now, 2 years out?
I was literally working on the RFP for our ceremonies when we got on the air here. So yeah, we're already looking at venues. Certainly, hotel rooms are top of mind, and we hope after we have a captain named early in 2019 that we can start to allocate some space here at the facility.
Well, I'll go ahead.
We're already thinking about that.
Is this the part where I tell you Steve Stricker is going to be your captain? Did you miss that memo?
I must have. You know, I don't get a say in the matter. If it happened to be Stricker, there's a lot of positives that come with that, but I certainly don't know that to be the case.
Having been in the radio business and booking events and things, are you actually having to line up entertainment and talent 2 years out? Will they even take the bookings that far out?
Yeah, I mean, kind of like a hotel. you do, if you say, you know, we're going to guarantee you this gig or guarantee you this booking, you know, they're likely to listen. But we're still kind of crafting exactly what our ask is going to be of any entertainment at this point.
Jason Mingle, are you the tournament director of the Ryder Cup? What's your title now?
Yeah, Ryder Cup Director.
Ryder Cup Director.
2020 Ryder Cup Director.
Jason Mingle is the 2020 Ryder Cup Director at Whistling Straits. He's our guest taking Dead Aim. Whistling Straits has contested major championships before. And so in a way, since you already have the blueprints of infrastructure, is there much that you have to do on that front? I know that was a huge part of preparing Quail.
Sure, and we have the luxury here of this now is the fourth major event that's been held at the Straits course. And whether it was the 2004, 10, or 15 PGA Championship, I could say that we used the property slightly different each time. And certainly the uniqueness of the Ryder Cup is requiring us to look at this event differently than the past. Now, we have the benefit of learning from those events. So there's things that we learned in 2015 which will absolutely benefit us in 2020, and there's already been some work going on here at the Straits course on, you know, making it a little easier to get around from a spectator standpoint and things like that. So we have a great partner here in the Kohler Company, and they're committed to the exact same thing we are, which is delivering the best Ryder Cup in history.
Two-part question here, Jason. On the good side, what is a lesson that you learned from Quail that you're applying at Whistling Straits?
Sure. On the good side, well, it helps to have a week of good weather. and also, you know, we had a great relationship with the host committee there, with the membership at Quail, and certainly there was lessons learned along the way, very positive, that we're applying to as we build out our host committee here. We're certainly looking at some of the qualities and characteristics that we had in that host committee to apply here.
And I don't know if bad is quite the word, but maybe go about things in a different way. What is a go about things in a different way lesson that you learned here at Quail that you may be applying at Whistling Straits?
Yeah, I think just like we learned things here over the years, we certainly have learned things, whether it's at Quail or this year even at Bellerive, that we continue to apply to our future events. Certainly the PGA Championship and the Ryder Cup are unique in the world of sports, and they bring opportunities for continual improvement. So there's a number of things, certainly from a spectator standpoint, that we learned and continue to evolve going forward.
Jason Mingle is the director of the 2020 Ryder Cup at Whistling Straits. If his name and voice sounds familiar, he was the tournament director of the PGA Championship that was contested here at Quail Hollow. He's our guest taking Dead Aim. Let's get to some fun stuff. When I initially contacted you about this conversation, we swapped messages while you were in France at the Ryder Cup. Now, I don't even want you to try to tell me you paid for a thing, as you're the man running the next one. So what was the coolest thing you got to do? And was the trip so awesome that your wife has forgiven you for taking her from Charlotte?
Yeah, well, I think I did mention that I tacked on a vacation for that very purpose. To hopefully get back in her good graces after moving her from Charlotte. So I'll tell you, 2 weeks of beautiful weather, again, was the takeaway. The coolest thing we got to experience, you know, Wednesday night, they did a great job. Hats off to our colleagues and counterparts in France and in with Ryder Cup Europe. They had a great event at the Palace of Versailles. So it's not every day you wow. get to go to the Palace of Versailles and be in the company of really the who's who in the game of golf. So that was a special event that my wife and I will remember for as long as we live.
So there was an actual event held in the palace.
Yeah, we had a Wednesday night, they had a gala dinner, and so it was a very special evening.
Did you sit on a throne? You did, didn't you?
No, I did not, but I can't guarantee that no one else did.
Is that one of those places that you know, as you're walking around, I mean, at times I guess you're at dinner or you're in conversation and you just sort of get lost in that, but at a moment you sort of step back and you think, oh my God, I am here. In one of the most historical buildings in Europe and in world history. Does the gravity of that hit you during that?
Oh, from the second we got off the bus. And, you know, they had us walk through the grounds, which are gorgeous, and then into the palace itself. And I would say with every step we were thinking that.
Now, the best players in the world, and these guys are gazillionaires, do you get the vibe that they, too, recognize a special thing like that, that they're kind of awed and kind of, gee, this is cool that we're here?
Yeah, but I think that, you know, it wasn't just Wednesday night. It was kind of the whole week. And that's the special and uniqueness of the Ryder Cup is that it's a, you know, it's we call it where legends are forged. It's where if you're a professional golfer, that's the one week you have to kind of carve out your place in history. And so I think the whole week there was certainly elements of that for the contestants.
Because
and the families and caddies and everyone who got to be involved.
Jason, because of all the outings and parties and festivities that accompany the Ryder Cup, I don't remember that many organized activities like that being associated with the PGA, or am I wrong? Is that a almost as big a job as running the tournament, as planning all of these things?
Yeah, well, we're thankful to have a lot of great help, whether it's from PGA headquarters or from the host committee. You know, the PGA Championship is, you know, where we're unique in that it's a major championship, and we want the contestants focused on what's going on inside the ropes. So we don't hold as many outside the rope events as we normally do, or you may normally have with an event like the Wells Fargo. I'd say the Ryder Cup, you know, over the past few years, it's been more about, you know, how do we get the teams together with their captain on a regular basis. We've kind of and really, you know, as much for some of those other events we're talking about, like the gala, it's as much for everyone else who's in attendance as it is for the team. You know, we've kind of scaled back some of our asks for the team to treat it a little bit like a PGA Championship week where they're more focused on what's inside the ropes.
Jason Mingle is the director of the 2020 Ryder Cup at Whistling Straits, our guest taking Dead Aim. A lot has been made of the course setup in France. Let me say that I fully expect to see little to no rough and fairways wide enough to land Air Force One sideways twice. But in reality, how much preparation can you or are you doing to the course at this point when you still have 2 years?
Yeah, I'd say not much inside the ropes. You know, we talked earlier about the work that's gone on, but that's really focused on outside the ropes,
right?
The more spectator experience. You know, not much has gone on inside the ropes, and certainly once both captains are named, you know, they'll get a chance to come up here if they haven't been before. I'm sure both of them will play the PGA Championship here, but then they'll get a chance to start to think about how they might want it to play. Certainly, you know, the leadership of Kerry Hague on our side will play into that as well.
I'm trying to think, you know, as someone who just cuts the grass from time to time, how much planning can really go into it until after the snow melts in the spring of 2020? You know, can you plan for something or start work in advance of winter and then pick up where you left off after winter? Is that possible?
Yeah, I think as it relates to the golf course itself, you know, we have the privilege of you know, knowing for years or growing seasons in advance that the Ryder Cup is coming. So I can expect, I would expect that this fall, the week of whatever it is, late third week in September, that the course is set up very much like it might be set up next year, so that the captains can come in and Kerry can come in and see it in its like state.
Whistling Straits is part of one of the premier golf resorts in the country, easily a top five golf destination in this country. How far in advance of the Ryder Cup will you have to shut down the Straits course for public play?
Yeah, the plan right now is really not that far in advance. I mean, I can tell you, weather permitting, you know, the plan, at least tentatively, is for it to be open through the week in advance.
We
close it, or the cooler company would close it one of the days in advance. Now, that can change. Of course, Mother Nature can play a role in that. But a little different operating model here than other places around the country. But certainly as we get to late in the summer, the folks who do come out and play the Straits course, outside of just having a normal, phenomenal experience here at Destination Kohler, are going to get really a front row view in one of the premier events, premier international sporting events in the world, coming together over its final stages of construction.
Jason, get you out of here on this. You've run a PGA, you're running a Ryder Cup. As far as what you're doing now, I would think you've kind of peaked. I mean, you can't go any better than this when you're with the PGA. What's your long-term goal? What's next for you? Where do you want to go from here?
Well, while my family may differ in this, you know, I'm pretty focused right now on 2020 Ryder Cup and making this the best experience ever. You know, we'll huddle maybe this time next year and start to think about where do we want to go after this. You know, opportunities with the PGA will be there. But there's so much turnover annually that it's tough to really plot out 2 years in advance where that may take you.
He's the man behind it all at the 2020 Ryder Cup coming up at Whistling Straits in Wisconsin. That's Jason Mingle. And up next, to me, he's the everyman golf reporter. Kyle Porter is CBSSports.com's Eye on Golf, and he takes dead aim at this upcoming season in the world of golf with his 10 predictive questions presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors. We are taking dead aim, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors. Kyle Porter is CBSSports.com's Eye on Golf and has a really an everyman quality to his way of covering the sport. His 10 predictive questions, therefore, stand to be unique.
KP, last year this was question one, over-under major appearances by Tiger Woods, and I set the number at 1.5. This year I'm going to alter it somewhat. Over-under tournament wins by Tiger Woods, but I'm still going to keep the number at 1.5.
Yeah, it's a good number. I think that, you know, you look at, I was reading something today by Bob Harrig of ESPN, just talking about, you know, what's Tiger's schedule going to be? Is he going to play Tournament of Champions? Is he going to go to Mexico? Is he going to play Honda Classic? He's got a different type of PGA Tour schedule next year than these guys have seen and then Tiger has seen. So I think it's kind of up in the air where he's going to play. But I think the biggest takeaway from him in terms of 2018 is that when he plays, he's going to play pretty well. So I don't know. I think he's going to have a more regular schedule in 2019. So I'll go over. I'll say he plays 16 or 17 tournaments and he wins two of them.
Now, I had this discussion with people last year regarding Phil Mickelson, and almost to a person when we were talking about Phil winning last year, it was, if he's going to do it, he better do it early, because as the season wears on, I think Phil will wear out, and sure enough, that proved to be true. Do you feel the same way about Tiger, or is this a different animal?
No, I think it's I think it's different. I think he's still young enough that that doesn't totally apply. I agree with you that that's probably a narrative that we don't apply enough to older guys like Phil, who's going to be 49 next year. You know, other people that are in that age range. But Tiger's obviously fit. He's still just going to be 43 in December. And, you know, I think what's interesting, we always talk about the mileage that's on his body from the first part of his career, and obviously there's a lot of it. But he also hasn't played very much in the last 5 or 6 years. And so he's sort of gotten a reprieve from the violence of the swing and all the things that go with that over the last 5 or 6 years. And, you know, frankly, we saw him get better as the year went on in 2018. So I don't know that he's going to do that where he gets better from January to September, but I do think that he won't fade in the same way a Phil Mickelson would by the end of the year.
The second question is one of my favorites this year because it sounds like a fantastic Vegas prop bet. More likely to happen, Rory and or Spieth complete the career Grand Slam this year or neither one ever completes it?
Oh, it's so good. I think it's more likely that neither of them ever complete it.
Yeah, I think that's the safe bet. With the way this question is worded, that's the safe bet. I'm just wondering if anybody will bite this year.
Yeah, I think neither of them ever. But I think we always look at guys like that who are generationally great and say it's just a foregone conclusion, right? That one of them will win all four and complete the Grand Slam. But I mean, how many real shots at the Masters does Rory have left? He's gonna be 30 next year. He's probably got, you know, 7, 8, 9, 10, probably 2 or 3 or 4 of those he's in real contention. And you start doing the numbers, and you're like, well, I mean, he might do it, but he also might not. And, you know, same goes for Jordan Spieth. There can only be one winner of each of these tournaments every year, and that's what, you know, that's obviously what makes them so special.
Look, there's a reason why since the era of the Mashy, Niblick, and the Feathery, only 5 people have done it. It's not easy.
Oh, no. I mean, but we do this thing, like, right after a guy wins an event, we're like, oh, well, he'll win the Grand Slam. And you're like, well, wait a second. Like, he won the U.S. Open. Let's calm down. Like, there's just a finite number of tournaments. And when you start handing them out, like, oh, well, Spieth will win 3 or 4 more Masters, and Rory will get one. And like, the numbers just don't add up. Somebody's not going to win one, you know? And I think it's going to be fascinating to see how that plays out in the next decade.
CBSSports.com's I Own Golf. Kyle Porter is our guest taking dead aim. 10 predictive questions for the upcoming golf season. Last year I asked if Justin Thomas and Brooks Koepka were more likely to build off their major success or have that chasing appearance fees hangover that we see so often. Well, both had really good years. Brooks had a great one. This year, will both, either, or neither win a major this year?
I think the safest bet there is probably either. I think JT's awesome. I mean, I think that obviously he's really good at golf, but I think that we are sort of underrating how generationally good he is. I just thought it's so hard to follow up what he did in 2017 and to win. What did he win? I think 3 times.
He won 3 times. Yeah.
That's phenomenal. I mean, to win twice in a year is a great year in terms of, you know, the tournaments that a caliber player, Justin Thomas, is playing. To do it 3 times, to win Honda, to win, what else he went to, the Bridgestone and one other, whatever it was.
And he lost another WGC playoff to Phil.
Yeah. I mean, I think he's so special. And I thought that what he did at the Ryder Cup was really impressive. I mean, he was the heart of that team in terms of performance. I don't know about team room or any of that stuff, but I continue to be impressed by him. And the thing about him is that he's so consistent in every area. You look at strokes gained putting, you look at strokes gained off the tee. Like, he's not a Rory where he stands out in driving, but then he struggles a little bit in short game. He's top 30, top 25 in every single category. And when you have somebody like that, it's not foolproof, but in this sport, it's as close to foolproof as you can get. And so I think we're going to see him be awesome for a really long time on the PGA Tour.
Here's our major championship venues lineup next year. Augusta National, Bethpage Black for the PGA, Pebble for the U.S. Open, and Royal Portrush for the Open Championship. Do you think with these venues, we're more likely to see players padding their major championship resumes or more likely to see first-time winners?
Man, what a lineup, by the way.
Yes.
My goodness. I mean, when Bethpage is, like, easily the worst, quote-unquote, course.
Oh, yeah.
That's a pretty good lineup. I think that we're likely to see repeat winners. I think part of that is just a recent numbers game. You look at we've had so many first-time winners over the past few years that at some point I think you're going to see some of these guys repeat. Like, it becomes hard to, like, pick out guys that are good enough that haven't won. You know, I guess we could see, like, you know, John Rahm, Ricky Fowler, Bryson DeChambeau, Tommy Fleetwood. You know, there's four just off the top of my head that haven't won one. But, you know, the more first-time winners win, the harder it becomes for a first-time winner that's highly ranked to win, if that makes sense. And so I think because of kind of the rush we've had of first-time winners that you're going to see you're going to start seeing more repeat winners over the next few years. Over the next few years, no matter where these tournaments are played.
You brought up a couple of names, so let's skip ahead to one here. Bryson DeChambeau, Ricky Fowler, John Rahm. These are the three players currently in the top 10 in the world who have not won a major. Full disclosure, I'm talking to Kyle Porter, who is a graduate of Oklahoma State. All right. Which one wins first? Will it be this year? And if I threw in number 11 in the world, Tommy Fleetwood, would that change your answer?
You said Bryson, Ricky, and Fleetwood?
Bryson, Ricky, and Rahm are in the top 10. Fleetwood's number 11.
Gotcha. It's so hard because they're all so good that any of them could win any major. I think you look at – I mean, Ricky Fowler was like basically a one Patrick Reed chip that hit the pin on 17 from going to a playoff at the Masters.
Yeah.
How much differently do we think about Ricky's career if Reed's chip misses the pin, you know? I would hesitantly go with I don't know. You know who I'm going to go with? I'm going to go with Tommy Fleetwood.
You really wanted to pull the trigger on the cowboy, didn't you?
Well, I do. I think Ricky's he's it's interesting to me because I think he's as if this is can even be possible. I think he's both underrated and overrated at the same time.
Yeah,
I think that Ricky's career has been way better than people give it credit for because of. I mean, he's just performed as a top 10 player for quite a while now and consistently week in and week out. But he also only has four PGA Tour wins, and he doesn't have a major. And that at the end of the day, that stuff matters. It just does. If we're saying we're going to judge guys based on majors and wins and you don't do that, then we have to hold that against you on some level. So, you know, he's such a fascinating kind of lightning rod for all of this conversation about what makes a good golfer, what does winning even mean, all these different things. I think he'll eventually win one because it's almost statistically impossible to not win one if you're performing at the level that he's performing at. But I think Fleetwood's A game is maybe slightly better than all those other guys right now. I just think. And if he has it in a major league, I think he can go out one more.
Oh, I think so, too. Kyle Porter, CBSSports.com's Eye on Golf. Our guest taking Dead Aim, 10 predictive questions for the upcoming golf season. Cameron Champ just won his first tour event. I don't even have to ask you. I know you love this guy. The guy kills it. However, yeah. Some interesting stats. Averaging 324 off the tee last week, he was near last in the field in fairways hit, but third in greens hit. My question to you is this what is wrong with the game, or is this just where the game is and there's nothing you can do about it?
It's the latter. I mean, this is where the game is. I mean, if you are the PGA Tour and you are going to the courses you're going to and you're setting them up the way that you're setting them up, this is what you're breeding. I mean, this is what you're asking for. And so you can't hold that against players for – basically answering the bell in terms of what the PGA Tour has asked them to do. Now, I think we can sit here and argue all day about what is the PGA Tour's role, what is the USGA's role in all of this in terms of, you know, the Nick Saban quote, what do we want, is this what we want golf to be? But I can't hold that against a player or the way that he's kind of designed his game. And, you know, he's also really exciting. Like, I think that he is, you know, I don't know if he's the best quote in the world, but in terms of game and excitement and, you know, just somebody that I'm like, oh, so-and-so's in contention. I think he's right up there among the kind of the younger players of, you know, in golf today.
Oh, and I'm seriously, I would pay money. I would be more likely to pay money pay-per-view to watch Cameron Champ play Kapalua in January than I would to pay money to see Tiger and Phil at the end of this month. I mean, are you not excited to see that guy tee off on 18 and see if he has 7-iron in?
Yeah, I am, and I think what's fun about some of these younger guys is that there seems to be a real you know, I think once you've been on the tour for a long time, it becomes kind of rote. It becomes a little bit mechanical. Not mechanical, but it just becomes – it's a job, you know? And so you see young guys like Cameron Champ that are – it's still such a delight for them to go out and play in these events, in these tournaments, these majors that they get to play. And as a viewer, as a consumer of it, I think that's kind of the fun part of it, that, you know, Tiger playing in – I don't know, Arnold Palmer for the 28th time. You're like, he's just kind of grinding. But then I'm watching Cameron Champ play the Masters for the first time, and just the joy that comes from that. I think there's a refreshment to it that maybe you don't get in some other spaces in this sport.
I agree. Hey, one of my fave annual questions here, yes or no. Do you think the USGA finds a way to screw up the setup at Pebble and make themselves the story once again at the US Open?
I mean, the answer is always yes. I realized this either last year. Where were they last year?
Shinnecock.
Well, Shinnecock, but the year before that.
Oh, where did they screw? Oh, the year before that, we're at Erin Hills.
That's right. One of those 2 years, I kind of came to the conclusion, like, the question is not, are they going to screw it up? It's what part of it are they going to screw up? it's impossible for them to – I mean, and in some ways I feel a little bit bad for them, because any singular mistake, no matter how trivial it may seem, gets blown out of proportion in a way that it doesn't when you're playing Memorial or Bridgestone or wherever else these guys go to. But, you know – they've also brought it on themselves in a lot of ways. So, yes, I definitely think Pebble is going to, in some way, get screwed up for the 2019 U.S. Open.
Kyle, Billy Payne is going into the World Golf Hall of Fame for his work primarily in growing the game over the last 10 years as chairman at Augusta National. However, he made no significant changes to the golf course. He didn't want that to be his legacy. How much change and how fast do you think they occur with Chairman Ridley? Any chance of rolling back some of the Hootie changes that were so universally panned?
And I'd love to see it. You know, I think that Augusta holds so much power in the game. And in a lot of ways they've used it, you know, for so many good things, for the drive, chip, and putt, for, you know, they're having this this women's event now. Like, they've really wielded that in a beneficial way, I think, for the sport. And I think it would be beneficial overall to bring the ball back, to I don't know, allow so many of these courses that are classic traditional courses to still be to not become obsolete. I mean, we've talked about it a million times, but
well, you know, I got a lesson watching the Ryder Cup this year, and I'm not saying you need to grow it out to look like the nightmare at Wingfoot. I'm not saying that. But just raise the mower height one notch. Just yeah. One notch. And if you make it penal, and by penal I mean where a ball is going to sit down in that rough to where it's going to roll up your club face with a wedge, and you're not going to be able to move it more than 6 or 8 feet if it's sitting down. If you make it to where putting the ball in the fairway is the thing to do, I think that's how you take care of all this.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, obviously Augusta has the power to do a lot of different things, and I would love – and I think I've written about this. I would love to see them use that in the equipment realm. And yeah, maybe it's course management also. But for me, it's more with the equipment. And I don't know. Who knows how it's going to play out? I have no idea. I don't know if anybody does because of how much power the equipment companies have, but it's going to be really interesting to see how that plays out because it's become a real thing, you know.
It is.
And it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out over the next decade.
Kyle Porter, CBSSports.com's Eye on Golf, our guest taking Dead Aim. Final two questions on our predictive questions for the upcoming golf season. Is there a player that you have your eye on, like a Cameron Champ, a Sam Burns, an Austin Cook, that you think is going to take that next step this year?
Yeah, and I'm going to give you a name that is probably too obvious, but I think is just going to have a monster year, and it's Tony Finau. I think Tony Finau could win three times next year. And I think people sort of they look at him, and obviously he's not. I mean, he's ranked 17 in the world, so he's not underrated or anything like that. But he's had five runners up in the last 12 months in PGA Tour events, and it's not like he's playing every single week. He's had an incredible run, and I think he takes that final step into winning multiple times and becoming, you know, a top 10 or maybe even top 5 player in the world.
Final question, your surprise or gut prediction about anything in the world of golf this next year?
Oh, I'm never prepared for this. I think that Bryson DeChambeau abandons his coefficient of restitution series and starts putting with the pin out again. No, I don't know. I think that Jordan Spieth is going to have an awesome year in 2019. I know that that's not really going out on a limb because I think most people think that he's generationally great, but he did not play well for him in 2018, and I think that I think that guys that are that good and that driven, I think he's sort of obsessed with golf. And I think guys like that who are that talented figure it out eventually. And so I think he wins two, three, maybe four times in 2019.
Well, you know, it's funny you bring him up. I was having a conversation about him yesterday with someone, and we were discussing that even though you may look back on 2018 as a lost year, he's a couple of good breaks by Patrick Reed away from coming out of nowhere to win the Masters. And
he has
the lead on the last round at the Open Championship.
Yeah.
So it could have gone from a meh year to another two major championship year very easily.
I know. I was looking back on his finishes because I wrote a piece on him for our site for Wednesday. And his only top 10 after the Masters was the Open. And when I saw that, I was like, oh, yeah, he played in the final pairing at the Open.
Yeah.
And you're like, it's different, right? Because he's judged in a different way than Alex Noren is or Francesco Molinari is. He just is. Like, that's just the reality of being Jordan Spieth. And I think he understands that. But it wasn't, like, I think people act like he missed, like, 20 cuts or something, and the reality is that he just had, you know, he had five top tens, five missed cuts. It wasn't bad by any. I mean, there's a ton of people out there who would take that. It was just not great by his standards, and a lot of it goes back to the putter. He was 136 on the PGA Tour in putting last year. That's not good. And as long as that improves even a little bit, he's gonna contend and probably win again in 2019.
From CBSSports.com, that is their Eye on Golf, Kyle Porter. I hope you also enjoyed the take from John Patrick, syndicated host of the Augusta Golf Show, and our chat with the 2020 Ryder Cup director, Jason Mingle. A reminder, should you just be catching the last little bit of the show and wonder what all we've covered, hey, no worries. Just subscribe to the Taking Dead Aim podcast at Apple Podcasts, and it will automatically download to the device of your choice most weeks, just minutes after this terrestrial radio version of the show finishes airing. Additionally, a great way to stay in the loop with us is to be a regular consumer of our Facebook page. Be sure to like us on Facebook. Just search Taking Dead Aim. Hey, weather-wise, what else is new? It's going to be soggy, but also sunny for the weekend. So make some time to let this game continue to haunt your soul and break your heart, even if it's cart path only. And if you do put a peg in the ground, remember to exhale, swing, pose, and keep it in the short grass. I'm Charlie Nance on Twitter, at @CLT_golfguy, and I'll see you right here next week, Taking Dead Aim, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.